It's a fabulous Saturday in April, actually. It's the first Saturday in April. And once again, the team are on location for the midweek drive for Siren Radio and indeed Southside Broadcasting. And Eloise, we have had the journey across the Wheat Bridge.
We have. The Wheat Bridge has made my day.
That's quite exciting, really. I mean, what was it going to carry, the weight of the car? Was it not? You know, we got there. Where are we, Eloise?
We are in Scarborough.
And we're also with another E-numbered person. Of course, it's Emily. Emily, making your debut, your first official location report.
Yep. First ever science convention too.
I see. Emily is an undergraduate at the University of Leeds Trinity.
Yes.
Just want to get the name about that. Came over from Northallerton today. And what are your initial thoughts, Emily, on what you're seeing so far?
It looks very interesting. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I see Steve Dickinson is actually coming to actually have a few words with us, which is always wonderful. He's pointing, he's indicating. This is very exciting news. It's the Steve Dickinson. Yay!
Hello, I'm here at last.
Oh, well, there we are. We introduce you to Eloise Sheehan, who, of course, first time at Sci-Fi Scarborough, and Emily, who's also doing wonderful things, Emily Hartley.
Lovely to meet you guys.
Not J.R. Hartley, obviously.
Oh, that's fly fishing, isn't it? Exactly. Yellow Pages.
We're probably too mature to actually...
to remember, yeah.
It's great. Now, Eloise, this is third convention in 2 weeks, basically, if you include Sci-Fi Weekender and The Walking Dead in London last week. Four. Yep.
You're not conned out yet. You must be conned out.
I am slightly, but I'm going to pretend that I'm not.
This one will be a lot more relaxed. It is a very relaxed con, and you won't be squashed or crushed anywhere, unless you want to be. And then obviously.
No, I'm good.
I mean, it looks as ever, Steve. I mean, is this number six in the system?
Yeah, number six, yeah. Yeah, it is. We've come a long way in a...
I remember the second one very well, and the third, and fourth, and the fifth. It's been awesome, and in so many ways. So it's Emily's first ever science fiction event, so we're kind of balancing the whole thing here. What advice would you provide for her?
Got that look of terror that everyone has when they first come. You are geeky, I take it?
Not particularly.
I don't know, she lays cables and works in a bar.
That's what they all say, and then we find out what they like, and you will find something you like here, and there was something for everyone, or a guest that you're particularly interested in, or something that you find cool, and then you realise you are a geek, and you just nerd out and enjoy it.
Well, I mean, Eloise, I mean, as you can see, Steve is not only manifesting the fantastic Superman T-shirt, he's also got the official communicator badge there, which is always exciting from that point
that's
of view.
Discovery as well, and the new
series. I was just going to say, yep, sorted through. And Eloise, would you like to... Because you've already met a couple of the guests today.
I've met Andrew Lee Potts a few times before, yeah. He's okay. I've met Hattie Hayridge, so he's pretty good.
Excellent. Yeah, they're very nice.
I mean, last week I was very impressed when we were at Sci-Fi Weekend. Eloise was embraced by a Game of Thrones actor, of course, who was...
Ian Beattie.
Ian Beattie.
Yeah, he's a top guy, yeah. We'd like to get him on here.
Well, I think we'll get that sorted through. We'll get that sorted, because we've got Sam Stone and David J. Howe, who actually, when they're not writing books and doing various other things, they actually are responsible for the organising of Sci-Fi Weekender. I think we can say there's probably going to be less swearing, because Brian Blessed isn't in the house today.
Oh, I'd love to get Brian here. Brian would be awesome, but yeah, he does like expletives, doesn't he?
Quite a lot, I think it's fair to say.
Only slightly. The children were slightly traumatised.
Yeah, my kids are used to it, so it's okay. Not for me, for my wife.
Steve, just talk us through any sort of areas we should be particularly paying attention to today. I mean, we're just standing in the entrance area. Where are the sort of key zones we should be checking out?
Okay, we've got a really cool arcade going through to the left here, through Flynn's Arcade, with lots of gaming in. And we've got some great students in there beta testing and alpha testing some games that they're developing at college. Some robotics to play with and stuff. There's a lot of Doctor Who stuff in there, a lot of Daleks. The actual actor...
Any Paul McGann stuff?
Paul McGann, I wish Paul McGann was here, to be honest. You know...
So do I. I wish he was here too.
Eloise's favourite Doctor. She even, whisper it, actually has some body art celebrating Paul McGann. Is that not the case?
I might do,
on
yes.
Your back. Massive head on your back. You have, haven't you? I know you have. I like him for With Nail and I as well. Because that's one of my favourite films of all time. So I know that. So, yeah, and basically upstairs in the Ocean Room, we've got a great big cathedral of creativity going on again. So we've got special effects makeup going on. Gorrywood are there. They work in TV and film. There are the body painters up there, the Midlands Body Painters project. They're absolutely fantastic. And then we've got our local NYPD with all their props on display. A planetarium. We have a Tatooine set. We've got the R2-D2 builders who make R2s for Disney. And we've got our space pirates doing space pirate training there all day. It's absolutely fabulous.
So, lots to occupy us. Eloise, any thoughts?
I'm just looking forward to going and seeing the Daleks, really.
Dalek-tastic. There's about 11, 12 of them, I think. It's crazy.
And any thoughts or questions from yourself, Emily?
No, it just looks interesting. It's going to be good to experience something different.
Little did Emily realise when she asked to do work placement with us at Southside Broadcasting that she'd end up doing this as a whole resistor.
Yeah, this is it's a bit of an experience. Yeah, you also try and get up to the Regency Room as well. There's a lift just down the main reception corridor. There's a cinema in there with some really interesting fan films that have been made by people around the world, America, Ireland, and very in Scarborough as well, very much in Scarborough. Arthur and Cyber King Productions, who you'll see in the Suncourt Suite. With their TARDIS and Daleks, these young lads that make their own films, and they've made a 40-minute special. I've got a flash drive in my pocket. I've not even seen it. I've asked them if there's any swearing, and they say no. They better not be.
That's Steve Dickinson. Harsh, but perfectly fair. Steve, awesome as ever. We'll catch up, I'm sure, during the course of the day. And go from there.
All good. Thank you.
Well, having spoken with the awesome Steve Dickinson, we now find ourselves at one of the first stands we've come to, and, of course, it is the stand of...
Andy Cole.
And are you the very same?
I am not.
I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
There's a Cole connection there, because clearly I was expecting Andy Cole, the Manchester United and Newcastle United footballer, but yeah, different line entirely. Share with us, you must be very proud of your father and all the fantastic work we've got here.
Yeah, definitely. He's put a lot of hard work into making all of the artwork ready for this show.
Okay, I'm going to actually ask Eloise here to give me any sort of favourite thoughts here. We've got Andy Cole's son here. The website, of course, andycoleartist.co.uk. Eloise, any thoughts on this range of material?
They're absolutely amazing. I'm really intrigued by the Jeff Goldblum picture on a bookmark over there. Can you tell me more about that?
Well, usually we try and theme stuff around Comic-Con, but we were kind of not sure. At the end of the day, he's a character that everyone loves. He's in so many different films, really popular actor.
It's Jeff Goldblum. What's not to love?
Yeah, exactly. So one of our first shows with him, so we'll see how he does.
And Jurassic Park, etc. Emily, any thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, it all looks very interesting, very...
I'm intrigued by the surprise gift bags, actually. That sounds great. We've got wonderful sort of green striped gift bags for a mere £10. And you've got artwork and a whole package of other good things from that point of view. Do you have any favourite yourself, or is that okay? So I could tell you, but my father would then be very upset.
It's hard to say. I mean, I've got quite a few favourites. I quite like the Dalek picture over there. Mm-hmm. And one of that seems to be really popular for a lot of people is Stitch, which we didn't expect, but...
Lilo and Stitch, what's not to appreciate from that sort of point of view? So, do you have geek tendencies yourself? Is there a sort of notion where you think this is great, or is it a case of I'm doing 2 days here at Sci-Fi Scarborough and I'm just supporting my dad?
No, I love the whole environment. I'm really into most of the genres, so it's good fun for me as well as helping him out, obviously.
And let's give you full name, as opposed to son of Andy Cole, which sounds like son of Frankenstein, son of Dracula. So your full name is?
Max Cole.
Max Cole, fantastic. So we're doing our little audio promenade. We're in the artists' area. We will be speaking, hopefully, to Lee Bradley and, indeed, Jeff Cummings shortly. And Richard Piers-Rayner, who, I don't know if you recall, Eloise, we were talking about his Doctor Who work. He's actually illustrated not only the Seventh Doctor, but also the War Doctor as well, from that point of view.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that earlier. They're actually amazing, the pictures that we can see in front of us, especially the version of Paul McGann that I'm quite interested in.
I thought you'd like that.
Yes.
That's why Richard will be arriving. He'll be coming back, and we'll catch up with that as well. In terms of the great comic scenario, Emily, do you have any favourite characters?
I don't actually have any favourite characters, but I might find one today.
Well, that's good. So we'll work our way through that. I remind you, you're listening to Siren Radio's Midweek Drive and Southside Broadcasting on location in association with Pharma Nord Nutritional Supplements, actually at the Sci-Fi Scarborough event, Geeking Beside the Seaside. And I gather, actually, Emily, you have not been to Scarborough before, even though your parents say that you have. So somebody's right and somebody's wrong there.
I don't remember coming, but yeah, apparently I have been before.
Previous life. Eloise, of course, your first ever sort of trip to Scarborough?
Yep, not quite been this north before, so...
See, Eloise has never been in Yorkshire, so, you know, be gentle with her.
Yeah, well, I'm from North Yorkshire, so...
Yeah, I can tell from the accent.
It's always wonderful when we meet absolutely star celebrity people just wandering around through Scarborough, etc. And who should we encounter at this particular moment in time but an awesome web guy, a guy without whom the Anomaly Research Centre, frankly, would just not exist, etc. It is, of course, the amazingly talented...
Andrew Lee Potts, you know, be my agent.
Yay! Always quitting. Now, Eloise here with me is one of my undergraduates at the University of Lincoln. Remembers meeting you back in the day when actually Primeval was the only show she ever really liked. Is that right?
Yeah, that was correct. I was a bit of a nerd back then.
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh, no, it's a while ago now. Yeah. But I think they've just repeated the whole thing, a whole 5 seasons on Sci-Fi Channel. So it's been on like twice a day, which has been cool because my little girl got to watch it.
You look very Connor Temple with the hat today.
Do you know what? I cut all my hair off. So I haven't had a lot of hair for ages. I did it for a film, and it's just started to grow back enough for me to wear a hat again.
Honestly,
so
this you is actors one of the first and, your, days and, your, and your and your method ways. I mean, you take Stanislavski to
oh,
ridiculous
extent. Yeah, all that gels. All of the above.
Listen, we're delighted you're here at Sci-Fi Scarborough. Obviously, Steve Dickinson was beside himself with happiness, etc. What are your thoughts about geeking beside the seaside?
Oh, I love it. Oh, yeah, I do. I lived in Brighton for many years, so I do love the seaside in any capacity. So being up here, I do love it. And everyone's got my accent, so it's brilliant.
And clearly that Brighton connection with Ben Lewis connects even further, really. A chap who couldn't be with us today, but you know, obviously sends his best, keeping the Brighton flag flying.
Who?
Ben Lewis.
Ben Lewis, oh, sorry, I didn't hear what you said then.
I say who as well.
keeping the flag flying, yeah. But like, Brighton's a wicked place. I've actually shot a couple of things down there as well. I did my first movie in Brighton, which was pretty cool. So.
Now, I seem to recall, not too long ago, you were getting involved with webisodes and a whole range of exciting things. Would you like to just talk a bit more about that, and are they still available online?
Yeah, I do Wireless, which I've been doing for 5 years now. Surprisingly enough, we're on episode, I think, 15. We shot it all ourselves for free. We put it out there for free for people to watch. It's on www.wirelessweb.london. You can see all 15, 16 episodes. But that's kind of my passion and my baby when I'm not doing my real job.
I mean, and it's opening up now. In terms of obviously the thing itself, it's got a sort of science fiction bent to that whole side of things.
Look, I'm not even having a coffee this morning yet, and all these questions are coming.
he's doing very well. I mean. We'll come back later. It's just a case of your praises have been sung so often over the years. It's a delight to actually touch base with yourself. Emily, any questions? Speechless, you see.
Now you're under pressure. Now you can't speak. Looking at me and judging.
Eloise.
Obviously, you've been in a lot. You've been in Turn to House on Haunted Hill, Primeval, Alice, Spectre to George Gently. What's your favourite thing you've actually been in?
What's my favourite thing? You just reminded me of some stuff that I forgot about. My favourite thing was probably playing the Mad Hatter in Alice, just because it kind of encapsulated everything that I feel confident doing, which is the kind of action stuff, but mixed with the sarcasm and the comedy. It kind of just fit me like a glove, I think, at the time, and I could be crazy and I could be weird, which I am. So, yeah, everything about Alice. And I was so lucky, Katarina Scorsone, who played Alice, she's just phenomenal, so it was just a pleasure working with her. But yeah, I mean, I'm very lucky. I mean, you mentioned George Gently and stuff. I played some scarred up, very violent gang leader. You know, I've played lots of different characters. I've just played, I can say this, yeah. I've just played Michael Collins, which is the Apollo 11 astronaut who piloted, Apollo 11.
He didn't get to the moon. He flew all that way and all he got was moon, to...
Yeah. Well, that's in The Crown on Netflix, so that's the new season in The Crown, so which I've just done. Andrew, I get to do lots of random stuff. I've been to the moon!
This is Andrew Lee Potts as Michael Collins. It's fantastic. I mean, and not to be confused, obviously, with the Irish rebel
obviously
leader.
Obviously, I play it as an American. Yes. I've not got a Yorkshire accent in it.
On the other hand, you know, it would be interesting. And finally, in terms of, let's talk about Primeval very briefly. Mm-hmm. Any chance it'll ever come back? Because obviously, shows tend to live forever in all sorts of ways. Would you be amenable should the right offer come through?
I think they should bring the brand back. For sure, you know what I mean, the Primeval brand. I think it did really well. I think I'd love my kids to watch something glossy and cool looking, that with a British sense of humour, with all the action and stuff. I mean, doing all the cons and stuff, I guess it keeps showing me that there's still love out there for it, and it did kind of hit home with quite a lot of people. So, yeah, I think they should bring it back in some capacity. I don't know whether they just reimagine the whole thing or with a different cast. I mean, I'll be old enough to play the Professor by the time they get around to it, right?
That's time, you see. It's just an illusion, as Einstein once said.
Yeah, but so I've got a few more grey hairs now. But maybe that'd work, you know?
Andrew Lee Potts, it's been a genuine pleasure, a delight.
Right.
We'll catch up with you hopefully later.
Can I have a cup of coffee now?
Of course. It's on us. Take care. Cheers, mate.
All right, guys. Thanks.
I'm just looking at the views of Terry Molloy, of course, Davros in Doctor Who, and the big screens here. We've moved up to the first floor of the Scarborough Spy Thing. And I think Scarborough Spy Thing, I'll be precise, it's a sci-fi weekender at the Scarborough Spa Resort. And Eloise, you're looking at the R2-D2s.
I am, because I'm pretty sure I worked with those guys 2 weeks ago, but I'm not too sure. So.
Shall we find out, then? What do you think, Eloise? Shall we find out?
I think we should. We should go and investigate.
Did you leave on good terms?
I don't think I spoke to them, so they won't know who I am, but I'm pretty sure...
Right in the same event. Well, we can only ask in that moment when I say, have you got any questions? You say, yes, have I worked with you? We'll find out. Well, with beeping things, with very... Would you like some beeping, sir? I mean,
yeah, no problem. Yeah, let's have some beeping.
Let's go and get some beeping. Yeah. Okay, let's go with that, because at the end of the day, radio without R2-D2 genuinely beeping, it's just a whole new world. We're delighted now to speak to a gentleman who's got upon his person emblazoned the words UK R2-D2 Builders Club, www.astromech.info, and could it be Lee?
That is correct, yeah, it's Lee Towersy. Yeah.
Lee, good to connect with your good self. I was amazed when I saw you guys a few years ago, actually at Sci-Fi Scarborough, the quality and range of stuff they've actually got here. I mean, it's just everything you need for R2-D2.
Indeed, yes it is, yeah. We're just a fan group of UK R2 builders. It's a worldwide club, but we're the UK division, and we build our own R2-D2s for fun.
And what sort of events do you go to as far... I mean, obviously, sci-fi conventions, etc. What's the schedule been like for you over the last few weeks?
Well, we're always busy. There's always comic cons and various charity events going on, and we attend as many as we can. We don't get to go to as many as we always want to, because it's quite a big job getting the droid to an event and so on, you know, vehicles and just the whole setup can be quite difficult.
Okay. Eloise, thoughts? I mean, I'm just taken by the miniature R2-D2 that was sort of going along. I thought, I best not step on him, really. It's a disaster. Eloise.
I actually know nothing about Star Wars. Can you explain to me the different colours and what they mean?
Yeah, of course. So the blue one is R2-D2. He's the hero. But from the same factory, there were other astromech droids produced as well, which are used through the Star Wars universe.
Is BB-8 around?
Not here today, I don't think, no. But he's another version of what we call an astromech droid. So they're droids which are mechanics, if you like, and they all have different purposes, and they all have different designations, different code names and so on. But R2-D2 is your main guy.
Thank you.
Saved and navigated all sorts of things. Emily, these look in many ways like the kind of customers you'd get when you're serving in a bar, really. Or possibly students. Thoughts for yourself?
I can see there's lots of electrical wiring and everything going on. Is it really difficult to... Are they difficult to, like, construct?
They are quite difficult, yeah. A lot of people... I think the quickest one was built in about 6 months, but usually we take about 2 years to build one. You have various skills to build a droid. You can have woodworking skills, cutting plastics, and, of course, electronics, like you mentioned, as well. Not everybody is well... knows how to use all of those skills, so we do help each other out. That's what the club's all about. If somebody doesn't know how to do electronics, then we get an electronics guy to come and give them a hand. So as a club, we all help each other out so we can complete our builds.
Phenomenal. I mean, I've got to ask the question. We're approaching the end of the Fall 9 series. Lots of concerns about after Solo's slightly lacklustre production at the box office, only in terms of rear moves, which I perfectly thought it was a really good movie. What are your thoughts and anticipations about the big December event?
Well, you know, JJ's back, and I think, to be honest...
Lens flare. Yes. Lots of lens flare on screen.
Of course, yeah, no doubt. I thought he did a pretty good job with The Force Awakens, to be honest with you. And, he's got a big weight on his shoulders, I think, to deliver, you know, a good end to the trilogy. But from what I've seen, because I work on the films, I control R2-D2 on the films myself, and I built him for The Force Awakens onwards. And from what I've seen, it does look stunning. But it all happens in editing as well. So as much as, you know, what JJ has got on film... We'll see what the editors do with it, but I'm sure it'll be fine. It's in good hands.
See, really, we should have a kind of a... Oh, we've got a wonderful sort of kind of... How would you describe this R2-D2 who's come to say hello?
Well, this is an all-black, an Imperial droid, we call this. It's C2B5.
Ah, of course.
And this is from Rogue One. It's a lovely droid. And it's all 3D printed, I will add, as well.
That is something I wasn't aware of, and even the Rogue droid wasn't. Yeah. Strange world. Do you know how much fun Ben would have been actually having at this particular moment in time? It's unbelievable. One of our colleagues who sadly couldn't be with us today. Was that actually featured in the movie? Were any of these featured in the movie? Or have you sort of, is there a separate sort of reading? Do Lucasfilm and Disney keep hold of the originals in the movie?
So the original R2-D2s that I built are owned by Lucasfilm, and they stay in Lucasfilm's archive. But with the other droids, all the background droids you see in the new films are fan-built R2s that we get in to be in the background. So, we're very lucky that we get to use our droids in the films.
And long may it continue. We did a tribute last week, of course, to the late, great Shane Rimmer, who was in the very first Star Wars movie. We'd worked extensively with Shane. We are losing some of the Star Wars actors. Obviously, Carrie Fisher will be around in a completely generated way, etc. But who's your favourite character of the Star Wars universe? Or is that just a ridiculously difficult question?
Easy. R2-D2, obviously. If you're talking...
Just testing, Lee, just testing.
If you're talking actual cast members, they're all great. You know, they're all good fun to work around, to be with. Harrison Ford's an icon. You know, he's iconic whenever he walks on set. You
and
know,
the Carpenter.
Yes, of course. But yeah, they're all great. But my favourite character's got to be R2-D2, and it got me a very nice job as well. So
exactly, yeah. All works well. An actual dream. And web address for the R2-D2 Builders Club?
Yes, it's www.astromech.info. There's a worldwide club, which is astromech.net, and we're on Facebook as well. So please look us up. We're a helpful bunch of guys. We can help you if you're thinking of building a full-scale R2-D2. We're the people to help you out.
So now you know, Emily. Now you know.
Yep, very.
Eloise, when we've spoken to Robin Pierce, obviously from the Starburst magazine, he has made great play of the fact that one of his prized collections from Batman 66 is, of course, his collection of ocean-repellent bat sprays. And shark-repellent bat spray is clearly the one that is essential to that whole movie. If you've never seen Batman 66, the movie, clearly you need to put that right in the very near future, Emily.
Yep, definitely.
So what else? I mean, we're actually standing outside an area which is NYPD, not New York Police Department, easily confused, but this is the North Yorkshire Props Department, and they produce a whole range of things here. And just talk us through some of the things we can actually see, as well as the oceanic repellent bat sprays, Eloise.
Well, I'm really interested by the Hannibal stuff here. It doesn't seem like something you'd normally find with all the predator and...
Sorry, I was just channeling my inner liver there, you know, that sort of, you know, bottle of Chianti, Silence of the Lambs, the 1990 US censors, you know, just a little bit.
Well, that's, I was not expecting that. But with all the other Avengers and Batman and Terminator, it just seems a bit out of place, but it's quite interesting.
I mean, you say that, but I suppose in terms of horror, certainly the remake of The Thing done by John Carpenter here, in which we see this manifestation of an alien species that effectively starts taking over and absorbing everything from, as you can see here, Emily, literally those petri dishes out of which great bug-eyed monsters actually develop and take over, so quite scary, but hopefully you're in safe hands here. Right the way through to obviously the Predator. I mean, what's not to love about the Terminator? Terminator, surely.
I mean, I've had enough of Arnold Schwarzenegger this semester after doing it, but I'm out of words.
Okay, we'll progress a little bit further, because as we actually continue to wander along here, you can now actually see the moment that could lead people to actually say, Savior of the Universe? No, this is actually the original Flash helmet from the 1940s incarnation. I can tell, Emily, you're sort of fascinated by this. And if I ask the question, so what was the alter ego of the Flash back in the 1940s in the original Golden Age? Jay Garrick is what you'd obviously say. I think we've got Ant-Man's helmets there as well from the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, that's the new Ant-Man version. Not quite as good as the comic version, but it's very impressive what they've done with it.
Exactly. And as we continue together with respect to the Marvel Universe, here we have, of course, a range of Avengers. Now, Emily, you cannot tell me you've not had any familiar with some of the Avengers movies.
I think I've watched all of them.
There you are, you see. This is excellent, including, of course, Infinity War Part 1, soon to be followed in a few weeks' time by Infinity War Endgame. So what are we actually looking at here in terms of this chap here who's got a sort of facial helmet on? What's his name? It begins with Iron and ends with something else.
Iron Man.
Well done. It's like a school trip, isn't it, Eloise?
Yeah, she got that.
She sends an email in saying, can I do some workplace for the Southside Broadcasting, and suddenly she's expected to identify sort of superheroes. There's a rhyme from that point of view. And finally, so we're back with the Terminator. Before, of course, we head off to another line of things, which is Hellblazer, of course, Hellboy, which deals with a whole range of things here. I mean, one thing that does impress me, and we will hopefully speak to some of the people from here minutes to come, but the amount of effort and love and energy that goes into these things, very impressive.
It is, yeah. I know from making things myself that it takes a lot of time, so, and it's really nice that they've brought the things for people to have a look at.
Are you a manga or anime fan, Eloise?
I've seen bits of anime, mainly Studio Ghibli, but that's all my education goes to.
That's good. And Emily?
Not particularly, no.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at an area now which is sort of almost a mezzanine level, where we're looking at retro games, looking at manga, and we're delighted to speak to, from the Scarborough Anime and Manga Society.
Hello, my name's Will, and I'm the president of the Scarborough Anime and Manga Society.
Fantastic. For a moment, I thought your name was Will President, but, you know,
I guess you comment, yeah, it happened as well.
It's important. And?
I'm Josh, I'm the co-founder of SAMS.
Okay, so talk to us about SAMS, the Scarborough Anime and Manga Society. Manga translates as irresponsible pictures, so it's the kind of the written version. Anime, we see various other things. I mean, many people will remember probably Aquaboy or lines from that point of view, but it's got very sophisticated.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's been a lot of developments in it over time, and I mean now the animation can become absolutely beautiful. Like, for example, one of your interviewees there has watched Studio Ghibli. I mean, they've got some fantastic pieces of work that you can watch. But we offer, lots of different anime at our society, don't we?
Yeah, we're a public society for everyone to join in, basically. We run every 2 weeks in Scarborough. We actually come all the way from... I come from York, and Josh Camille comes from Sheffield every now and again.
Wow.
We have a lot of local...
That's crossing
members.
Borders and boundaries.
Well, yeah. The thing is, we started off at university here 5 years ago this year, actually. It's going to be our fifth anniversary in October. And we took it out of university for the last 4 years, and we've got all these wonderful people that... I know that people can't hear it, see it, but they're behind us right now. We put on events, we screen anime, we play games, we have a laugh, and we all get on and have a lot of fun.
Well, Eloise will be graduating this year, of course, from the University of Lincoln. Ever considered setting up a gaming society? Very lucrative area.
If I had the time, I probably would.
She's fretting about her dissertation. It's all right. So do you remember dissertation times, guys?
We used to be
at the University of Hull Scarborough campus. That's where we started this whole thing. And we kind of just moved it out so that everyone could access it.
And Emily is literally just in her first year, so it's okay. Lots of wit.
Yeah, I'm fine.
So what would you recommend Emily or indeed Eloise to actually access, or indeed somebody who's listening to this who might think, well, there's so much anime, there's so much manga. I mean, Netflix has started a whole new series that's come through. Where should I start?
I'd go on Crunchyroll. That'd be a really good start. It's a service which you get a free trial for in the beginning, and then you have to pay about, I think it's about £5 a month, and you can watch loads of different anime. Netflix is also a good start, like you just mentioned. And you could also come and visit us, because we show lots of different things as well.
That's definitely good. I mean, Will, from your own perspective, as I mentioned, the gaming industry, the profits literally through the roof. I mean, is that something which you kind of thought, well, it's expected, or is this the way in which we're heading? I mean, Bandersnatch, I suppose, from the Netflix sort of area, was a way of showing different storytelling lines.
Well, it's always kind of been that way for a while now. But the one thing that you need to remember is that if you support the industry, like, so if you buy your manga, if you buy your anime games, if you buy your anime, then it encourages them to bring out more stuff, and it encourages them to bring out new, nicer stuff, because they obviously get the money back for it, and it keeps it going. And it's becoming more of a thing in the UK, and it's especially large in the US as well, so you're getting more stuff that's now in English as well, so it's not all just Japanese with subtitles, which is really nice, because we have a few people that can't necessarily catch up with the subtitles because it can be really fast. So English, when they dub it, it's called dubbing. That's the process of overdoing it with English, is a lot easier for people to understand, so that's what I'd recommend.
And it's worthwhile pointing out, of course, just as we said, that NYPD is not New York Police Department. SAMS is actually not Strategic Air Missile. It is actually Scarborough Air Anime and Magazine. In these days with Donald Trump, who knows what could happen? It's, all the things can happen. Who's this young lady who's sort of observing? Is she security?
My name is Rosie, and I'm the treasurer and the secretary for the society.
So, Rosie, was it a case of you met up with these two fine folk at the University of Hull campus, or was it a case of, no, you've come to it at a later stage?
Well, I graduated from the University of Hull in 2014, and it was not long after when 2015 began, I met up with the gang from the Anime Society at the Roscoe's Bar, and I wanted to join in there for a while, but, obviously...
They wouldn't let you in, being a female, was that right? Was it sexism?
Well, everybody is welcome to the Anime Society, whether they're male or female, or when they have, learning disabilities or difficulties. Like, I myself, I have a diagnosis of Asperger's Syndrome, so it's a really welcoming environment.
Excellent. And favourite characters? I mean, I go back to the days of Yurok Sakadoji and Legend of the Overfiend. Very scary. Wouldn't recommend it to anybody. What about yourself? You strike me as more a kind of Howl's Moving Castle person.
I'm a huge fan of the Studio Ghibli films, and Howl's Moving Castle is one of my favourites, and also Spirited Away, who won the first Academy Award for Animated Feature for anime, so that was a pretty good achievement for them.
Okay. And favourite for yourself?
Well, I'm more of like the slice of life kind of thing, so I've got to think about like K-On! And stuff like that. So, to be fair, it'd be Ritsu from K-On! Won it for anything,
And clearly,
from Railgun, because she's our logo.
and finally,
I would probably say My Neighbour Totoro. That's my favourite film of Studio Ghibli.
stuff you can actually access, really.
Yep, I've got a few of those at home.
And any of them sort of float your boat, Eloise?
I don't mind. I watch them with my housemates, so they're all pretty good.
You see, manga. You can watch it with your housemates as well. Actually, you read manga, you watch anime. Let's get it precise. Yes. I don't know. Many thanks indeed. Web address, of course, is?
It's www.scarborough.anime.co.uk, and you can also find us on Facebook by searching Scarborough Anime and Manga Society.
One of the great things, as I regularly say to Steve Dickinson about Sci-Fi Scarborough, is you get a wonderful combination of authors, writers, artists, and so on, and some are new, some are sort of more seasoned pros. We're looking now at the fabulous Sarah Elliott's collection, which includes A Simple Wish, The Age of Savagery, Wolf Gold, Wolf Silver, and indeed, we also have the fabulous Sarah Elliott in person. How are you, Sarah?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
Now, Sarah, you obviously have a friendly dragon perched upon your shoulder there. Is this a deliberate sort of attempt to actually sort of just give you a little bit more of an edge?
Actually, he's a backpack that I've had for a long while. He's called Gerwin, and he guards my car keys when I'm at events like these. But lots of people do come up to him and talk to him, so it's all great to be able.
Gerwin, the backpack gardener and guardian, indeed. He probably does gardening as well. And he probably looks after keys, exactly. Have a word with him, anyway. Eloise, questions.
Hi, this is obviously a series you've got going. Could you tell me a bit more about it, please?
Yeah, the Wolf series features characters who are half vampires, half werewolves, who are thrown into a situation where they're trying to survive against the world that obviously doesn't like them because they're abominations. And in the end, through a series of events, they have to choose whether to save the world or destroy it. So it's following.
So much like Brexit, then, basically. Save the world, destroy the world.
An interesting take on it, but yeah.
That's why we need backpack dragon gardeners in the background, but still. Emily.
Does it take you a long time to write your books, or do you usually have lots of ideas and write them quite quickly?
It varies in times of length and write. For example, A Simple Wish was originally, it started off life as a fan fiction, then got rewritten, and then got redrafted, so that took about 10 years all told. The Vol series took probably from conception to actually being finished about... I lost count now.
Time, isn't it? It's an irrelevancy. It goes into one different sort of area. Wolf, as opposed to Wolf, you're obviously channeling the inner lycanthrope there. Or was it just a case of you thought, well, we pronounce it like German, as in Wolf Gang?
It was actually a case of when I was trying to come up with a type for what to call a half vampire, half werewolf, I scattered loads of different words down and mixed them up, and the one I eventually fell on was Wolf, because I quite liked it. It was different, it was unique, it worked out. It was only when I actually came to publishing that I realised that it was actually Germanic term. So I had a bit of fun with that.
We have an A-level German sort of soul here, basically, so I mean, clearly you honed in straight away, I believe, Emily.
Definitely the pronunciation would be both.
Ausgezeichnet, as many German people would actually say when they're faced with a simple wish indeed. Sarah, I don't recall seeing you last year. Is this your first Sci-Fi Scarborough?
Yes, it's my first time trading here.
So what are your thoughts?
So far, so good. Seems really friendly, really atmospheric. The cosplayers are going mad, and Mini-Ace, my little mascot down here. He's a pirate packer. He's having great fun getting...
I think we will actually get our mascots out and we'll have a joint mascot photograph in a few moments. So that's always great. I detect a slight northern accent. Are we talking Durham or Tyneside?
Newcastle upon Tyne, just north of.
Where the fog on the Tyne is all thine.
Yep, indeed.
Can we look forward to seeing you at various other events, etc.? Are there any other sort of signings that you're going to be up for in the next few weeks or months?
I'm all over the place. The nearest one I've got here is, Manchester for Oldham Comic Con. In May, I'm up at a few up around Newcastle. Basically, check the website.
Which is the next line, of course. Can people actually reach you on the web or indeed on the socials? How do we connect with you?
I've got a Facebook page, which is called Arguing with the Fish. Don't ask about the title, it's an ongoing joke.
Did you say Arguing with the Fish?
Yes. It's an ongoing joke with me and my dad about a book I have yet to write. So.
Is that Thee Shall Have a Fishy on a Little Dishy When the Boat Comes In?
Not quite, it's something else.
I'm telling all my inner Geordie here. It's great, you know. Ian Lennox and Arthur McKenzie, step to one side. Eloise, any sort of final thoughts? No, she's gone from that sort of point of view. It's been a delight sharing some thoughts with your good self, Sarah. Wish you all the very best, and hopefully we'll connect again telephonically or some way, shape or form as well.
Yeah, absolutely no problem. Thank you very much.
over the last 25, 30 years, I've been doing radio interviews up and down the country, from your Angela Rippons right the way through to your Tony Blairs, the William Hagues, etc. I've never actually had that initial opening, "Would you like a mint?" And of course, those words were uttered by the fantastic Alistair Lavers, author of Witch's Brew. Good to connect with you, Alistair.
Lovely. And I'm having a wonderful Saturday.
Absolutely, Saturday and of course Sunday. Now we're looking at a wonderful selection here, Witch's Brew of course, and Treasure Trove. Share with us, what are they all about?
It's a 5-book series based on a Yorkshire seaside resort, based on Scarborough and Whitby, and it's going to be on TV in a couple of years, 4-part series, probably ITV. I recruit people from Facebook groups to play characters in the books.
That's using social media in a way that social media should be used. So, I mean, again, these are people that you've recruited from...
volunteers from all over the world, yeah. Just playing characters in the books. We do this each time a new book's produced. Put out an appeal on Facebook, and we get people sending their photos and details, and they all appear in the books eventually.
And I see they've got
people from Canada, South Africa, Italy, Germany, and America, and Yorkshire, of course.
Well, I mean, exactly. Emily, would you like to appear in one of these books? Would you have sent in your Facebook picture for that?
I probably don't.
Yeah,
I don't,
she's probably thinking about it. Okay, Eloise.
Hi, could you tell us more about the book itself? Because it looks sort of like a horror genre, or is it science fiction based?
Supernatural horror comedy. That's... basically.
That's genre hybridization carried to the ultimate extreme, really.
And it's more like a soap opera than a book series. There's a very big cast of people, and they all dip in and out of the storyline. There's one plot, which is carried through 5 books, but there's lots of people nipping in and out of the story. And eventually we develop a favourite list of characters, and there might be more books after the 5th one, depending on how it goes on TV. So.
It sounds very Charles Dickens-y, the way you've sort of set out the plot. And...
yes, yeah. It's written in an older style of English, more like Dickens and an 18th century author.
So, but do we have the equivalent to the Pickwick Papers classic Ode to an Expiring Frog there at all?
Yes, but it's very heavy on sarcasm.
I mean, you know, as I said, that's
adult orientated. So, yeah.
I think there's a place, nevertheless, Alistair, for "Oh, how shall I view thee sitting there upon a log? Oh dear, oh sweet, expiring frog."
I couldn't come up with anything better than that this morning, because I haven't had a drink yet. I'm sorry.
You see, that's what happens when you launch an interview in connection with offering somebody a mint. Eloise, any other things?
Yeah, sorry, my brain went. You've obviously got 3 books here. Are all 5 written, or are you still carrying on with that?
There's another one coming out in November called Wicked You, and that'll be $7.99 like the other ones, and then another one in 2020, and then I'll have a breather.
And just allowing for the notion of, is that so obvious that I really shouldn't ask the question, but is it a portmanteau word, as in Whitby and Scarborough, which leads to the line Whitborough?
I'm afraid so, yes. It's very obvious, but...
I'd love to hear our satellite navigation say Whitborough. It would be, if it's anywhere, it's a different thing. It's been a delight sharing some thoughts with you yourself today. Alistair, you've talked about social media and Facebook. How can people reach you online?
I've got a website. You can just put my name into Google and everything comes up, all on images, so we can give you a complimentary book.
This is just wonderment upon wonders. This is great stuff here. And it's in a...
get in touch. Yeah.
I think we'll do more than that. We will get in touch. Eloise, I think this gentleman has earned his place on the Midweek Drive phone-ins, hasn't he?
Oh, definitely, yes.
I'm having a recruitment drive for new characters next weekend at Whitby Gothic Weekend, because I do that too. And I also do HorrorCon in Sheffield and Hard Rock Hell. It's a heavy metal...
We will think of you when we're actually covering the Countryside Lynx event at the Lincolnshire Showground. It's equally as horrific, but we're dealing with giant tortoises and farm animals.
Right. Well, I've got a naughty rhino in my book.
A naughty rhino?
And a very...
stop the presses.
A very dirty terrier, but you can find out about all about...
A dirty terrier and a naughty rhino.
Yeah, it's a very dirty, naughty terrier, actually.
Called Bert. Well, you know, I thought Sarah Elliott's... Gardening Dragon was going to be sort of hard to push, but the Dirty Terrier named Bert. Andrew, it's been fantastic. Alistair, I would say, fantastic connecting with your good self. We'll speak again very soon. Many thanks.
Okay. Thank you too.
You know, sometimes, do you get the feeling, Eloise, that people are just too sparky, too early in the morning?
Yeah, it's far too early for me. I'm still asleep.
And those of us, whilst we were doing the Whitbury author a few minutes ago, might have heard, oh, it's a Wookiee in the background, the excitement and dynamism, that's what we actually say, that can only be created by Emily 1 or Emily 2.
Hello!
And...
Kat, hello!
Yay! Marvellous stuff. Kat, what are you doing here?
We're promoting our comic Kitty and Millie.
Comic Kitty and Millie. Talk to us about it. What's it all about? Why should this is the must thing for a must do thing?
Okay, so it's basically this fan.
Like, you should like me to tell them.
Yes.
A grumpy comic book artist tries to escape her fans by creating a portal, and instead she gets trapped with an over-enthusiastic fan, the most over-enthusiastic fan she's ever met, and they travel through
That's
weird...
That's not played
dimensions.
By yourself, is it, Shirley?
Oh, I'm the grumpy one.
No. I'm the happy one.
She's the happy one.
Yeah, I'm
well,
the really happy one.
It's like Ben Lewis and Abigail May all over again.
And essentially they go through really weird dimensions where they meet really weird characters.
Just like Bob. He's like, I don't know how to explain him, Bob, but he looks like a demon.
He's the almighty, incredible, amazingly famous Bob. And if you haven't heard of him, you know nothing. But you can follow us on Facebook, Kitty and Millie. It's quite easy to remember.
Eloise. She's gone very quiet. She hasn't got a word to say about Kitty and Millie. Okay, Emily. You've stunned both of us.
With happiness.
Exactly. So how did you, what inspired you to actually develop this? And talk us about where, I mean, are you university students? Or what's the connection?
I was a university student. I'm now old.
I am 14 years old. So,
essentially we met because we
eyes are being rolled there, basically. Sort of. Really? Has it been a hard life? Clearly, maybe she's been in a trans-dimensional system.
You know, I'm 14. I was
shock, isn't it?
She's so young. So young.
She's a genuine millennial.
I know. Essentially, we both realise we love Rick and Morty, but it's not very child friendly. And
that's very true.
I was surprised.
14-year-olds, you didn't want them exposed to that.
She was. I actually met Melanie, and who's her mum. And she was telling me how good an artist she was. And I couldn't believe this 13-year-old liked Rick and Morty. I was like,
13 then?
Yeah, she was 13. I was like, your daughter does not like Rick and Morty. That's wrong. Anyway, so we basically came up with our own idea of an all-female kind of Rick and Morty type thing, except it's child-friendly and not completely aggressive.
So who's the crazy professor, then?
Well, Kitty, sort of, but she uses crazy art and painting.
Rick and Morty, Eloise?
I've never seen it.
No. Unbelievable. How many comic cons have you been to?
Far too many.
Yes. There is a Rick running around somewhere.
Yeah, there is a Rick going around, so you might be upset.
How can people access your details? You mentioned it once, but let's plug it one more time. How can people find out more about the awesome Cat and Kitty?
It's Kitty and Millie, and it's at Kitty and Millie on Facebook, so it's pretty easy to remember.
Cat, obviously, something you're going to write into the whole system. So what are your thoughts on Sci-Fi Scarborough, then?
It's awesome. So much fun.
Are you a regular at other Comic Cons?
I'm pretty regular going to Comic Cons, and actually this is really nice. Like, I love this Comic Con already.
Talk us through some of the Comic Cons you've been to.
I've been to London Comic Con.
You might have met Eloise at London Comic Con. Oh, maybe not.
Wait, when was it?
Eloise, when were you last at London Comic Con? So you've never done London Comic Con. Never mind. We can edit this out.
My first Comic Con was in Manchester, and I think, the biggest one I've been to is London. Where I did cosplay as Rick and Morty. So
at the same time?
No, not at the same time. We played the whole family. So my mum was Beth, who's the mother. My dad was Jerry, who's father. I was Rick, and my brother was Morty. So that was a good Comic-Con.
I'm just amazed. Guys, I'm sure if we're looking to actually replace nuclear power, we can just plug you into the national grid and great things will manifest. Many thanks indeed. Take care. See you soon.
Alright, thank you. Bye. See you.
Thank you.
Emily, you were talking about cosplay and I suggested maybe an Ewok could be a possibility, you're suggesting, yes?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
Well, who better than actually a gentleman who's played an Ewok in Star Wars Return of the Jedi? It's the awesome Willy Coppin. How are you, Willy?
I'm fine, thank you. Yeah.
Willie, talk to us about some of these routines, because obviously Star Wars, 40 years, 41 years now, No, more, 42 years. Still going strong. What did you think when you first got the role?
Well, I was working in Derby in a motor spare shop at the time. One of our customers heard an appeal on local Radio Trent. Radio Trent, which was the Nottingham radio station. And I went along to the agent. He said, yeah, you look right, because he'd had people who were 5 foot two phoning him and saying...
Difficult to be an Ewok when you're 5 foot two, let's face it.
Yeah. So he said, yep, made arrangements for me to go down to the studio. Went down to the studio and I was expecting him to ask me to do something. And so arrived there, said, ask for the lady I was told to ask for. And they started measuring me up. And the way they were talking, I was thinking, hang on. So I said, excuse me, have I actually got a part in this film? He said, nice. Yeah.
It's a way forward.
Yeah.
I mean, Brian Blessed would appreciate that as well when he was a Gungan. We were talking to him, he was chatting last week about a number of bits and pieces. Eloise.
Hi. Obviously, you're here at Sci-Fi Scarborough today. What is the best thing for you about doing these events?
Obviously meeting the fans. But coming back to Scarborough, I did a summer season back in 84 when I was a lot younger.
That's before either Eloise or Emily were born.
Probably before their parents met. And then, yeah, I mean, their parents probably were youngsters at the time, but yeah, it was a long time ago. And so coming back to Scarborough is nice to see some of the older haunts, but the theatre I was in has now been... There's a big hole there now because it's been demolished.
Yeah, it wasn't anything, but they just realised if Willie Coppin doesn't return, and if Denise Coppin isn't going to be there, we're going to lose all sorts of things, basically. I mentioned Denise there. Also, Denise, have you also done Ewok duty?
No, I'm not an actress. I just come along and help him with the signings.
So, yeah. That makes perfect sense, basically. Yeah. So, Willie, you look back at Star Wars. Is it something that you like as a movie? I mean, are you a fan from that point?
I hadn't actually seen any of the Star Wars films until I got the part. And I didn't see the original film for quite a while, but I saw Empire Strikes Back for the first time at Elstree Studios. On the evening of the first day of shooting, it was on in they'd got a cinema there, so we were able to go and watch it, so which was good.
Excellent. Well, and what are you doing at present? I mean, apart from obviously being here at Sci-Fi Scarborough, where will you be heading off to?
I'm doing another Comic-Con next weekend in Wigan. I've got quite a few Comic-Cons coming up over the next few weeks. There's a couple of things in the pipeline. There's one secret project, which... I'm waiting for...
Shh, can't talk about that, Willie.
I'm just waiting for them to come back to me. But even if I'm lucky enough to get it, it'll be years before I can say what it was.
Willie, we wish you well. I know it's going to be awesome. Take care, and hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Okay, and you.
Just next door to, of course, our Ewok, we have somebody who I know, Steve Dickinson, was really delighted. He was beside himself with joy when he said, finally, Caroline Blakeston's going to be at Sci-Fi Scarborough. Caroline, it's a privilege and a joy to meet you.
Well, I'm absolutely thrilled. Actually, nobody ever believes me when I say it, but to be here in Scarborough, which I've never visited before, I'm beside myself. I'm absolutely beside myself. Arrived on a train yesterday via York, and I came down and I had to walk all the way around the town. I know the town quite well now. I know where Marks and Spencer is.
That's all you need to know, Caroline, surely.
Yeah, that's it. And the best Indian restaurant in the country.
Would you like to give it a shameless plug or just say it's the best Indian restaurant?
I'll give you a shameless plug. It's called the Scarborough Tandoori Indian Restaurant.
That makes sense, yeah.
I think. And they gave me the best, wonderful meal carry out. They were just gracious, polite, helpful and kind. And old ladies like people being kind.
We don't mention the O word, Caroline. We are chronologically gifted or experientially enhanced.
That's also true. And still standing.
It's the way forward, as I regularly say to Annette Andre over in Los Angeles. Eloise.
Hi. I haven't seen you at a Comic-Con before. Do you do these sort of events a lot?
Where have you been? Obviously none of the places where I go. Cincinnati, were you there recently?
No.
Yes, I do them. I do them sometimes and not all the time because you have to book. People like you to say you're going to come a long time ahead and you can't always make a commitment. And you may not be free. I'm publishing a book which should have been out last Christmas and the Christmas before, but various things happened, so it hasn't yet been published. But that has taken my time very much, so I didn't want to do anything else. Which part of Lincolnshire are you from? My grandfather was a clergyman in Lincolnshire, We used to go and stay with him and his wife. It was at Kirkby-on-Bane. Is that anywhere you've heard of?
We're just actually in the city of Lincoln, in Lincolnshire, but I'm actually from Hammersmith and I just go to university in Lincoln.
Two old Londoners, then.
Chronologically gifted Londoners, really work on that basis. Casting your mind back 42 years to the joys of Star Wars, did you have any impression at the time when this movie was being made that actually it would resonate with people long into the 21st century?
I was already not in the first one, so I'd heard of them, though I'd never seen. And I had a very tiny but rather sort of noticeable part in it. And it was a job, was what it was. And then you learn later on that it has this worldwide important mythological good and evil story. They're important films. People dismiss them, people who've never seen the films, of course, dismiss them as being shallow, rubbish, American, bad, and anything else nasty that you can think of. But of course what they are underneath is the battle between good and evil. I'm on that side.
But you've proven the case that actually they're not, and anything but that, Caroline. Emily, any thoughts? She's just stymied by the whole... The awesomeness, Caroline. The awesomeness of you being there.
Is it awesome because you're seeing somebody that you've seen in a film looking like a real person?
Yeah, that is...
Yes, it's a short answer. Yes.
Listen, I once met Steve, whatever he was called, a famous film star who did racing films.
McQueen? Steve McQueen?
Steve McQueen. And I was introduced to him in a line of people about to play a part in a film, and I went to you and so, and here's Steve McQueen, and I went like this, and I froze, because they'd said Steve McQueen, and I couldn't speak, and I didn't get the job, of course not.
That great escape. Never mind. Different line entirely. Caroline, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self. Many thanks indeed. Delighted that you're in Scarborough. Hopefully we'll catch up again before too long.
Good luck. Do well. Work hard. Hard work is the answer to everything. And be happy. And come back when you get your tongue back.
Quality of crafts that you get at Sci-Fi Scarborough, I always maintain, is probably slightly better than the average quality of crafts. So we're now actually at a stand which says Ellen Stubbings Illustration. And could this be the genuine Ellen Stubbings?
It is, yeah.
It is. Wow, fantastic. Ellen, talk us through some of the things you actually got here.
So I sell a lot of badges and stickers and cute stationery, but I also sell my comics. So I make comics about just my everyday life.
Which is, of course, I mean, in the line of graphic narratives, one of the critical aspects of how graphic knowledge and sequential storytelling is developed. What got you into comics in the first place?
Well, I'm actually a children's book illustrator, primarily, but I've always just liked comics as well, so it kind of branched off from starting in kids' books and then developed into more comics.
So in terms of actual comics and lines within that, any particular favourite characters, any sort of artists that you'd like to say, yeah, that really influenced me?
Oh, I don't know, I like a lot of indie stuff. I like to go around conventions and pick up comics by indie artists, so yeah, there's quite a few. I can't really think of any off the top of my head.
Okay, and just looking through some of the things you've got here, I mean, clearly there are lots of themes coming across here, magical, precious, top cutie and so on. Inspiration, what sort of inspires you?
A lot of things, really. Like books, movies, I watch a lot of animated films, graphic novels, and just I like to take pictures while I'm out and draw from those a lot of the time.
The totality of the universe. And Ellen, how can people get in touch with your good self? Would it possibly be a case of Ellen_Stubbings for Instagram, socutecompany.com for the web?
Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
Just always important to get those sort of things. Do like the happy birthday sausage. And your thoughts about Sci-Fi Scarborough? Is this your first one?
Yeah, it's my first time here. It seems really nice. Everyone seems very friendly, so...
Have you travelled far?
Only from York, so it's not too bad.
It's been a delight sharing some thoughts with your good self. I'm sure we'll speak again soon. Take care now.
Thank you.
Always important that we get our interviewees sorted out with the right dress sense for radio, because it's very... I mean, at BBC, when they used to have dinner jackets, they would actually have the right sort of sense of dress. We're about to speak to the fabulously talented Hugo Myatt. Hugo, good to connect with you, good self.
Welcome, everyone.
You see, that's the thing that gives children nightmares. I'll say again, nightmares.
Nightmares, indeed. What did I say? Welcome, Watchers of Illusion, to the Castle of Confusion.
That's it, Eloise.
That's wonderful. It's made my day.
Brian Blessed, I'm sorry, your old hat. You know, we've got Hugo Myatt online.
Thank you very much.
So, talk to us about Hugo. Is this your first time at Sci-Fi Scarborough?
It's not actually, but it was about 40 years ago I was last here, so yes, in a sense.
And has it changed much?
I really wouldn't know. Still as lovely, that I do know.
Well, at least you've got the sea outside, so that's great from that point of view. Eloise.
I'm just looking at your pictures here. They're absolutely wonderful. How do you choose what pictures to get your fans to sign?
Oh, these are just pictures that I've had during the show. They wanted me, you know, for signing during the show, so I've just collected them all. There they are.
The fact that you still have, oh, there's still a resonance about Nightmare in that introduction. It's something about science fiction and fantasy that really kind of resonates with people. Do you not find?
Yes, it does. And funny enough, people keep blaming me for it. They say, people come up to me and say, you made my childhood, which is a wonderful thing to be said, but can you be retrospectively responsible? I don't know. But a lot of people have got them into gaming and into playing, role-playing and all this sort of thing. From this.
Were you ever tempted yourself to actually engage in the role-playing lines?
Well, I thought I did that for a living, really. I'm an actor, so I've been doing it all my life. Yeah.
Emily.
It said on Google that you appeared in Chuckle Vision. Did you?
Yes, I did. I played Count Vlad, who was what's his name? Blood-sucking character.
Dracula?
Dracula. And I frightened them to death, the brothers. They wouldn't come near me. Because I said, welcome, my children. Forget that. Leave it.
Even the signs have been frightened just by those words.
It was great fun to do. But I did actually frighten them a bit off stage as well as on. I don't know why.
Hugo, I'm sure it's just, as you say, it's an actor routine from that point of view. What are you looking to be doing in the next near future? I mean, obviously the score from Spielberg will be coming in, but what sort of things are you going to
just wait there with a phone and thinking Hollywood are going to... Look, I'm an old man now.
No.
Well, fairly. I mean, I've done 200 plays in my life. I've directed about 50. I've done quite a lot. So I'm semi-retired, I suppose you'd say.
But you played Count Vlad in Chuckle Vision, so what's not to love?
Well, how can you beat that? I mean, you know, sure... Yeah, I don't know. Anything that comes up. I'll do anything but opera and ballet.
I think that's a very sensible thing, and also doesn't exclude folk dancing or indeed working with children.
No. Working with children, yes. That's difficult. What do they say? Don't work with animals or children. I've done both, so...
Hugo Myatt, we salute you, sir. Take care, and I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
Thank you very much. Thank you, ladies.
With the words, we have missed you, I can say categorically that Richard Piers Rayner is back with us. Richard, good to see you as ever.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, I was looking at Comic Scene, issue 2 to be precise. Big interview with your good self. I hadn't realised that one of the reasons you became artists in residence at Middlesbrough Football Club back in 2000 was because your grandparents used to actually just live around the corner, and you also used to have this is a really difficult choice, actually, Eloise. Did you go for Tiger, Valiant, Victor, or indeed even Look and Learn for your comic of the week?
Well, my comic, you see, it's quite rather convoluted because unlike so many other English comic people, I kind of came through the American comics. I used to have my Saturday morning treat, which would be Lion...
Green Lantern?
You're ahead of me. But Lion, Tiger, it would be one of those. And they sort of fueled my love for comics. But I loved cowboys on the TV. And in those days, there was a cowboy on every single evening.
You got your buck... You got your buck, I'd say no more.
And I found in a little shop in York a copy of the Dell comic, The Lone Ranger, which was an American comic, American format, and miming the side.
Who was that masked man?
Well, it was Clayton Moody,
of course.
Jay Silverheels. Jay Silverheels as Tonto, and
his faithful Native American companion.
Hiyo Silver. But it was an American comic, and I fell in love with it because it was a full story. It wasn't just the two-page stories you would get in the English weeklies. it was full colour, which just blew me away. I mean, nothing was in colour. The world was generally black and white in
those. It was the 50s, Richard. Everything's black and white in the 50s, and I wasn't even born then.
But American comics were in colour, and I fell in love with them. From Dell Comics, I went to Gold Key Comics. I discovered DC Comics. You were quite right to say Green Lantern was my first superhero love, followed very quickly, probably a week later, by the Justice League of America. I don't know where we're going with this.
Yeah, I'm just whilst we're having this wonderful geek fest here, and I appreciate that both Eloise and Emily probably think, what, where? First ever DC comic that I can recall purchasing, and I think I've still got it somewhere, the Carmine Infantino cover for Batman and Robin meeting Poison Ivy, with Robin on one side, Batman on the other, Poison Ivy in the middle, in between.
Well, Carmine took over from when Bob Kane's various assistants had been drawing a rather traditional, staid-looking Batman. And Dick Sprang was a genius, was one of my favourite artists on Batman. But I love Carmine Infantino's flashes particularly, and his elongated man.
Ralph, didn't he? Elongated man could actually stretch any part of his body, much like Mr. Fantastic, but probably more fun.
He was like a private detective who could...
And his nose wiggled, if I recall, when he actually sort of had a certain sort of... He's literally wiggling nose.
I'm not sure we're not getting him mixed up with...
Bewitched,
but I can see the wiggly nose. I'm all the time, people should know I am miming these things.
Yes, this is good. It's called audio vision in a whole range of things. I'll bring Eloise in for this particular moment, because I was sharing with Eloise the fact that you have not only written and drafted and drawn for the 7th Doctor, Sylvester McCoy, but actually based it in Middlesbrough.
That's actually amazing. So what made you want to write and, like, draw for Doctor Who?
Well, because I love Doctor Who. There's so many things I had the chance to work for that I loved as a child. The Lone Ranger is the only one I haven't actually done yet.
Yes.
Never say never. I loved Doctor Who right from the very beginning, from when Hartnell first scowled at Chesterton. I loved Doctor Who. I can remember the very first episode. And I've watched it ever since. So I've always wanted to work for Doctor Who. And I'd been working for DC in America, and Marvel UK approached me to do the Doctor Who strip, and that's really where that came from. But I set it in Middlesbrough because I wanted the real world environment to look, to contrast with the fantasy world. I wanted it to look particularly real, so it was real and gritty, and you knew where you were. It was a location you could recognise as an everyday sort of place. And I knew Middlesbrough because I'd grown up in Middlesbrough, so... The story was originally set in Portsmouth when I got the script, but I changed it to Middlesbrough.
It's all right, they're just carrying on with the Harry Potter panel. It's okay. We're into Doctor Who in Middlesbrough. It's even more exciting.
Surely nobody wants to go to a Harry Potter panel when I'm talking about Doctor Who.
I know. I'll have a word with Steve.
It's bizarre. But yeah, that's how I set the story in Middlesbrough. I used the transporter bridge. I used my grandparents' house, which was right outside Ayrton Park. Which is the old football ground. They bought the house there because...
Richard, I still live there at the corner house, basically just next door to what used to be kind of Rears and various other things. So I'm still resident there.
Brilliant.
I remember Ayrton Park. That was a gritty... That was a proper ground.
Oh, it was a proper ground. Yeah, proper atmosphere. Proper. Oh, mind you, I've suffered there. All Middlesbrough supporters have a place where they suffer. And it used to be Ayrton Park, and now...
It's the Riverside. You're losing to Norwich, losing to Swansea. It's just as well as a Man City supporter. That's all I can say. I know. So, heritage. Emily.
What materials do you primarily use for your pictures?
Right. Interesting. When I was doing Doctor Who, I was working with pens, a very fine needlepoint pen, because the work was very detailed, with Indian ink. I got to a point, and this is when I was working for the football club, where I thought, I've taken this way of working as far as it's going to go, it's not going to evolve. And artistically, I want to keep challenging myself. I want to keep finding new ways of doing things so I can see a progression on the page. So I threw away the pens, and since then, I started using brushes and acrylic paint, and it's evolved. And it continues to evolve. Every year I challenge myself to take the next step.
Well, the other exciting thing, of course, Richard, is that Louise's grandfather, whose name is...
Sorry, you got my name wrong.
Eloise. Well, Eloise, Louise, I've just missed out one vowel, for goodness sake. Anyway,
about?
Eloise. Your grandfather is?
Phil Dennis.
Phil Dennis, who was?
Studio director for Doctor Who for 25 years.
Brilliant.
It's like a gathering of megastars, isn't it, really?
I know, in a genetic sense. While people are walking past, they should be gathering round.
Well, exactly. Harry Potter, who's that? We've got Eloise, the granddaughter of a set designer.
Also, going back to the Doctor Who, obviously you've got quite a few doctors that you've drawn here. Who do you primarily go to? Who do you prefer drawing?
Jodie Whittaker?
Jodie Whittaker's over there.
Yay.
I like them all. I like drawing people. It's not... The actual art is the challenge, but capturing likeness, really, you know... I'll do any of them. I love doing Doctor Who. I love doing Constantine when I was working for DC. I love doing all the football stuff because you're drawing real people, and I want to bring them to life on the page. So it isn't a favourite. I love doing them all.
Artists in residence for the Middlesbrough Football Club for 18 years 16, or 16 years?
16 years. 16 years, yeah.
It's always nice to actually encompass football, Lion, Lone Ranger, Tonto, Carmine Infantino and Doctor Who. I feel we've covered a fair amount.
We haven't mentioned any of the other greats, so I could also go on and on at great length. I could talk about Jack Kirby, one of the great artists.
Whilst we're doing that, I mean, we did a major tribute last week, of course, to the late, great actor Shane Rimmer, not an artist, but still a very, well, an artist in the acting profession. We lost Stan Lee, of course, and Marie Severin, and, of course, Steve Ditko. So, sad times, really.
Inevitable times, I think. You know, the world just moves on. It is sad. I was particularly sad when Stan passed, but it was not entirely unexpected, I think.
I think 95, so... No,
it's not bad.
Richard, I know you've got at least another 50 years before you reach your 90s, so that's all good. Travelling in time and all the rest of bits and pieces. Where will you be off to for your next Comic Con, and what other magical things can we expect from you?
Well, I'm doing another convention in Oldham in May, but I think I'm doing Bridlington in September. I don't do many conventions.
No, I know, exactly.
I only got back into it because I was invited to Paris, and there's who's going to say no to Paris? And
Steve Ditko might have.
For the most honourable of reasons. He's a very honourable man, Steve Ditko.
Indeed. It's been awesome. How can people get in touch with your good self online, Richard?
Well, you can find me on Facebook, on Twitter. You can see my website, rpisrainer.co.uk.
It's been, as we knew it would be, an awesome experience, and we'll speak again very soon.
I hope so. Cheers.
All that and not a single mention of 8th place in Middlesbrough Football Club and playoff hopes.
But no. Well, perhaps best let that one lie.
In this smorgasbord of creativity that is Sci-Fi Scarborough, we have now arrived at the stand which says, meet the author, Craig Hallam, who's even got a plasticine moustache upon his person. Craig, is there no ends to the sort of the joy that you actually bring to fans?
I'll do anything to sell a book. That's literally what it is. Yeah.
There are students on our creative writing course at the University of Lincoln who would actually sort of benefit so much from that routine. I'm thinking of maybe bringing in a module which is just on plasticine moustaches.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's one of those techniques that it's a bit of a secret in the industry, but once you've mastered it, yeah.
Plasticine moustache, Emily. Well worth thinking about. Eloise.
Hi. I'm looking at your book, Not Before Bed, over here. Yes. I'm wondering, by looking at the cover art, it's obviously not aimed at children, so who is it? What age audience are you actually aiming towards?
It's more, I would say, 16 upwards.
Sage nods there, which is even more wonderful.
You can't see nods on radio, can you? Yeah, it's more 16 upwards. So I started out writing horror stories originally for magazines and things like that, and they were in file 13 on my computer doing nothing. So eventually I just clubbed them together and bundled them up with a cool cover and then sent them off. So it's a lot of people tend to buy the book for the cover, actually, because it's such a great cover. So, but yeah, very talented artist.
It's a cliche question, but do you have any particular favourites from the adventures of Alan Shaw, from Grievebury, or Grieveburn, I should say, or any of the whole thing? Or indeed, is that Not Before... No, Not Before Bed. For a moment, I just thought it was Not Before Ted. I thought, is that a sequel? is that some sweary bear that actually comes on board and you actually say, no, stop it, Ted, now?
You do need to watch out for Ted, actually. Yeah, maybe I'll add that one in Not Before Bed, too. I think probably Grieveburn's one of my faves. It was my first novel, so it's kind of my baby, you know. But I'm enjoying writing Alan as well, because he's a bit of a tool. He's not necessarily a very nice guy.
Good choice of words, though. Yeah. Good choice.
I know you've got
so many words ending in head you could have used, but you decided tool. That's
I know you've got to broadcast this.
Exactly.
I'm from Doncaster as well, yeah. So I hope you realise how much I held back there.
So is Brian Blessed, you know, and he didn't stop.
That's very true, yeah, very true. But yeah, I'm really enjoying writing Alan at the moment. There's kind of a lot of me in him, so I'm. Although he's charismatic and brave and all that kind of stuff that I wish I could be, so...
Anybody, Alan, who can actually wear a waistcoat in the same way as you do, with a proverbial fob watch chain as well, I mean, that shows style, sir. Definite style.
Oh, I love me a bit of steampunk. Yeah, I've actually toned it down a little because I'm not wearing my goggles today, but... yeah, I do love some steampunk.
Well, Asylum, of course, the biggest festival in Europe. Of course, Lincoln. Are you a regular there?
Yes, yeah, I've been every year apart from one. But yeah, absolutely love Asylum.
I've done two. Last year I was actually delivering a paper at the Asylum all about the comparisons between Jules Verne and H.G. Wells.
Oh, that was you. I saw you actually on the programme. I wanted to go to that, but I had a talk on myself, otherwise I wanted to come.
Hey, yeah, is this, I mean, somebody who has actually seen my name on a programme. Wow.
No, that was great, yeah. See, you know, you meet people just walk up. That's the problem with social media now, though, isn't it? I've had five people walk up today and go, "Hi, I'm such and such."
Who?
Okay. Oh, my Twitter handle is, oh, that's who you are. Yeah, your profile's a dog with a hat. Yeah, that's why I don't recognise you. Yeah.
That's Doncaster humour, Eloise. I know from Hammersmith it might be challenging, but it is there. It's evident. Anyway, any further questions?
Obviously, you've got Volume 1 and Volume 2 here. Is it carrying on? Where are you going to take this?
Yeah, Alan Shaw's a trilogy. It was only supposed to be one book, and then as I was writing the first one, it got a bit longer, and then it got a bit too long. I thought, okay, maybe I need two. And then as I started writing book two, I was like, no, maybe this is three. But yeah, it's going to be a trilogy, so I'm about halfway through the third one now. So I'm looking forward to finishing that. And a bit nerve-wracking as well, though. Writing a sequel is much different from writing a first book.
In terms of kind of a comparison, more nerve-wracking than sort of being 2,500 words through a dissertation, which is due in a few days' time?
Zero judgment. No judgment at all. I am a night-before kind of person. Both of my degrees, I've done my dissertations like 2 days before, so you'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Thank you for that, Alex. You made sure.
Helpful stuff, though. Although I would recommend Eloise possibly not starting the night before for the whole
it's
piece.
Too late. You've told me to now. That's exactly what I'm going to do.
That's expert advice as well. Yeah, you've got to take that as gold.
So when we look forward to seeing acknowledgements, Craig Hallam for his advice on actually time management.
Yes, thank you for helping me fail. I really appreciate it. My second submission was much better. Yeah.
It's all good. Emily?
I've noticed on the board it says embrace the weird. What's behind that?
I never knew when I first started out what to write in books. Because, you know, they don't teach you that bit on courses and things like that, do they? So Asylum was actually my first sign-in. So I was like, I can't just write to you from me, Craig, sign. And it just kind of popped into my head, and I wrote it on one book. And somebody went, oh, that's clever. And I went, is it? Okay, I'll write that in every book from now on. So it kind of became a bit of a motto, and I like writing weird stuff anyway, so... But yeah, that's good. I need a badge, actually, but I'm going to put it on my bookmarks and things like that. So.
Definitely works. I mean, I tended to use the slightly long form, don't be happy, don't be flat or be sharp, just be happy.
Yeah, that's actually very good as well. I've been asked to draw rockets, cats, which have nothing to do with the books.
Probably a psychological test.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. Like, kind of like a Warshak test.
Yeah. Exactly. Looks like what?
Yeah. I sometimes draw a rocket. This looks like an avocado. Listen, I write, all right? I'm not an artist. If you're an artist, go to the table over there.
Craig, we talked about social media. Is there a website that people can go to find out more about the awesomeness that is Craig Hallam?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. It's just Craig Hallam Author, nice and simple. I'm on Twitter as well. So just type it in Craig Hallam and you'll find me anywhere.
And do you get a chance to look around the rest of Sci-Fi Scarborough? Is it a case of, no, I'm chained to my books here?
I try to stay behind the stall because if I don't, I go buy stuff. I'm a terrible geek. And especially meeting the famous people, I just turn into a geek puddle in front of them, and then I'm away for 45 minutes. So
Hugo Myatt?
I know. I used to watch Nightmare when I was a kid. I'm definitely going to go and talk to him later and geek out.
Yeah, I mean, you see Nightmare. I mean, his I was going to say Lucy for a moment. Let me get the name. It's Emily, and it's just because he did Chucklevision.
Yeah, he did Chucklevision.
Of course. Oh, yeah. Oh man, memories. Oh, see, I would say you're taking me back to my childhood, but that took quite some time because it was a long time ago. So, yeah, it'll take a bit of travel time.
Alan, we will continue to embrace the weird and hopefully speak with you again very soon.
Yeah, lovely. Thanks ever so much. Nice talking to you guys.
Cakes, what's not to love when you've got creative cakes, Eloise? You've got a TARDIS model, you've got a Davros model, you've got a Thunderbird 4 model, you've got a Predator model, and we're delighted to speak to Creative Cakes Ken, or with K's, KKK, nothing to do with the Ku Klux Klan.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Because obviously if you were Ku Klux Klan, you'd have a cake which had a big pointy hat on. Exactly. Just wanted to clarify that. And the fantastic steampunk cake here, and an I Am the Law cake. Orders are being taken. Eloise, what questions would you like to put to Creative Cakes Ken?
What is your favourite sort of theme to create? Obviously, you've got Doctor Who and that here. So what do you prefer making?
I think the most popular one, the one that we go with the most, is the Star Wars characters from them. There's so many varied characters you can go and you can elaborate on them and change. They change so often. There's always variation in the theme of them, so it's always a big popular cake still. and you get more of a more adventurous with them, really. I suppose you can push the boundaries a bit on what you can create and make them more like the real thing, in the sense that they're not so much a cake, it's more of an actual model or something like that. So there's no limit, really. It's imagination more than anything, how far you can actually go with them.
We said this last year, that it almost seems a shame to actually eat any of these, really. I mean, do you ever get to the stage... I mean, I suppose Davros looks a little bit chunky, so possibly could actually do with taking a few bits and pieces of her. But are there ever people who actually say, we don't want to eat this, we want to keep it like Miss Faversham, and actually sort of just stay there forever?
We have had it. I did a Death Star cake and an X-Wing fighter a couple of years ago, and the guy's still got it in his bedroom. He won't cut it. I mean, it's gone off now, it's no good, but he will not cut it. You know, he spoke to me, have you had that cake? No, it's still sat in my bedroom like that. Won't touch it.
Right, okay. Emily?
What cake's taken you the longest to make, and how long did it take?
I think the longest one I've done was a galleon. I did. It took me a week, and it was about 2 foot, like about 2.5 foot high. Everything, you know, the gun turrets and the gun ports and the figures, everything on it. It was all in chocolate and modelling chocolate and built up and lit up as well inside. It took got 6 days it took from start to finish to build that. That was really, really pushed me that one, dude. I was sort of sweating at the end of it, yeah.
I'm looking at the steampunk cake here, and obviously you've got a clock with it and you've got some lights and stuff. Do you like adding the extra touch, or does it make more work?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I think adding that extra just finishes it and gives it a bit more than what we tend to look at is the cakes we do are different from the norm, and that's how we work. So I always try to bring something that's got a movement to it or a light effect to it, something that draws the eye and gets people looking at them. And once they've drawn the eye, then they're saying, oh, well, why is that like that? And it gives that a bit extra all the time. It's something that draws people in.
Yeah. We've already heard Caroline Blakeston actually say that she's found the best Indian restaurant ever in Scarborough. What are your memories from Sci-Fi Scarborough this year, Ken?
It's busy.
That's busy. Good.
Yeah, always busy. I think, more than anything, there's so many... You see so many things, that, especially like from my childhood and characters that come along and say, oh, I remember that. And something you've forgotten about from years ago. Somebody will just turn up and say, oh, yeah. And then you see new things in people ask you about, like anime and things like that. And I don't know nothing about any of them. So, oh, can you do this? Who is it? You know, and you're sort of lost to it, and you've got to start thinking on your feet then. But there's so much going on, it's hard to keep up with a lot of it. But it's one of those things where it's constantly entertaining, I think.
Now, bearing in mind, we obviously need to have special presents for Eloise when she graduates. Do you do a Paul McGann doctor cake?
Definitely.
That's on then, we can put the order in. We can eat Paul McGann then, quite literally.
Perfect.
It's a way forward. Ken, it's been fantastic sharing with you. Again, the website is usual 3Ws, creative with a K, cakes, also with a K, .co.uk.
Just .uk, yeah.
A few years ago, in the mists of time, one of our great friends, Graham Harper, regular director, of course, director extraordinaire, was singing the praises of Terry Malloy, of course, in the Colin Baker Doctor Who episode. And Terry Malloy, amazingly enough, together with an illustrated tale of a bear and his youngling, is with us now. Terry, good to see you.
Hello, I'm going to sing the praises of Graham Harper, who's one of the most wonderful directors and lovely person you could possibly meet, yeah. Yes, I'm here in Scarborough. How about that?
Terry, I'm going to use that as a clip when we do a feature with Graham next week on the programme. So, and if that doesn't get you some work in his Western, who knows?
Oh, yes, I'm looking forward to that. He keeps on promising it.
I mean, obviously, looking back at that, I can't believe it was in the 80s when, of course, you were portraying Davros in Remembrance of the Daleks, or it was set in a funeral home, I believe.
Remembrance was, yeah. The first one I ever did was Resurrection. That was with Peter Davison. And then, yeah, Remembrance. Revelation. Was the one with Colin set in
and of course Nicola Bryant and Colin Spall, yeah. And a whole heap of other goodies who've done radio shows in between stuff. So you were destined to connect with us.
I think so. Yeah. Yes. With Alexei Sale as well and Clive Swift. It was a great.
I did say to Graham at the time, whilst we were waxing lyrical, interesting because Graham had worked with me extensively in radio in Dulwich then, yeah. And was Alexei Sale's attempts to channel the area of being a DJ in a morgue some kind of comment on my audience? I mean, come now.
I think it's a comment on most radio presenters, yes.
Glad you said most, exactly. Okay, let's move on. We have the fabulous Eloise with us today, whose grandfather, of course, whose name is...
My grandfather was Bill Dennis. He worked on Doctor Who for 25 years on the scenery.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. How lovely.
So what questions would you like to put to the awesome Terry Malloy before we even start talking about Montmorency
Bear? Yes.
Thank you.
Obviously, you played Davros. Yeah. If you had the choice of playing any other character, villain or otherwise, who would you pick out of Doctor Who?
Davros. Yeah, he's a great character, you know. I mean, I fell into it purely by accident, really. I mean, because I think it was a result of the BBC technicians going on strike, because it was the initial resurrection was meant to be done with Michael Wisher and a different director, but then everything went on strike, was put back about a month, and a new director came in, Matthew Robinson, who I'd been working with at TVS for the previous 6 months, and so he just called me up and said, do you want to do this? You know, and I said, yeah, why not?
Matthew Robinson was one of the main chaps behind Biker Grove back in the day.
He was indeed, yeah, and brother of Tom Robinson.
Well, as we like to say in the north, Biker Grove.
Well, I actually, because I'm originally from North Shields, mind.
Why, pet, I wouldn't have known why, yeah.
Well, yeah, I managed to get rid of the accent.
Wow. He shall have a fishy on a little dishy when the boat comes in.
I very, very often I go down North Shields fish market with me auntie. On a Saturday, and we'd bring in some skate and throw it in the pan.
See, being based in Hammersmith, Eloise, you miss all this cultural dynamism.
Yeah, it makes no sense. It's going straight over my head.
Emily?
I'm pretty used to it because I'm from up north as well. So.
Whereabouts?
Just near North Allerton.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
Is North Allerton fleet a bit better than Lincoln, Terry? Because, I mean, it's fair to say, if we were to go public with your views on Lincoln, not great.
Yeah, no.
On the road transport system.
I spend my time sort of trying to circumvent Lincoln because it's always...
Many of my students do the same thing, actually, isn't it? Okay, let's move on to this pronunciation challenge that's obviously given me, which is Montmorency. Thank you.
Montmorency, Montgomery Bear.
Okay, Montmorency, Montgomery Bear.
Yeah.
What's he all about?
Monty, as he's known... has been my bear since I was a baby. He, in fact, was born in 1936. He's a Merrythought bear, which is a very famous make of bears, a bit like England's version of Steiff. And I loved him literally to pieces as I grew up. He was in bits and was put away. And then I found him again, and I thought, right, we're going to restore you. So about 20 years ago, I had him restored by a professional antique bear restorer, and she put him back together as he would have been. Obviously, most of his hair has now disappeared, but it was actually Colin Baker suggested I write a book about him. I thought, yeah, okay. I'd never written a book before, so I started to write one, and it just wasn't working at all. And then, literally, one night I woke up in the morning, because people say, where do you get your ideas from? I said, when I'm asleep, actually. It's true, because I had this phrase in my head when I woke up, and it was, list and give ear, oh my sweetlings, my dears, whilst I tell you the tale of the bear. And it flew from then, because I thought, wow, this is a poem.
So I was gone with list, actually. I mean, it's wonderful. It's like, yeah. Brahms, but list and so on. Yes. In fact, if you're listening, Nick Briggs, get Big Finish on the case straight away. Forget Davros. This is obviously, we need this whole notion of Montgomery Bear to actually work through that.
There are so many adventures. I'm now writing another one because my I just had a granddaughter recently born, and so I bought her a Merrythought Bear, which is a replica of the 1930s. It's very like Monty was. And so I'm now writing, but I looked after Tiny Small for about 5 months before the baby was born. And so I'm writing a book about how Monty told Tiny Small how to look after a youngling, because bears are there to look after their younglings and be with them all through their lives and love them, you know, regardless.
I will actually repeat the line I was sharing with some people at SF Weekend last week with the Muppet fans and Jim Henson folk. Good grief, the comedian's a bear. No, he's a nut. He's a wearing a necktie.
Yucka, yucka, yucka.
Terry, is there, I mean, in terms of FBS publishing, is the best place to go fbs-publishing.co.uk?
That's the one at the moment, yeah. I mean, I have it usually. I only put it together, really, to have at conventions, you know. I mean, you can get it on Amazon as well. As most books these days.
Well, I mean, obviously Jeff Bezos needs every penny, so clearly...
Well, he does, yeah. I mean, with his divorce settlement, he's barely got a billion to rub together, hasn't he?
Barely got a billion. See what you get there? Marvellous. Eloise. No, you see, completely... Terry, it's been a joy delight. I will pass on your very best wishes to Graham, and I'm sure that'll be reciprocated.
Yep, best wishes, Graham. All the very best.
It'll all start now. And when I say it'll all start now, clearly when you've got Jeff Cummins, Doctor Who target audience with us, indeed target artists, somehow, Jeff, you know, the words are there, they just don't come out. I don't know.
It's the audience I need, really.
How are you? Very well indeed. Good. Chris Achilleos, of course, is one of the artists who's been most associated probably with a lot of the
Target. Number one artist, I would say, most people would
You're
say.
You're on his case, Jeff. You're on his case.
I live in his shadow all the while.
I've spoken to David J. Howe. He's a good friend of ours, and I'm sure that when he did his Target books collection, that clearly Jeff Cummins needs to be in there as well.
Indeed. No, David's done a great job anyway, I think, you know, like keeping Doctor Who alive when he went quiet, you know.
He would have been here today, but sadly, overexertion with respect to Sam Stone last week at Sci-Fi Weekend. We were there. They've gone down with the flu.
It was at Sheffield, yeah? Yeah, how did it go?
Eloise, how did you find Sci-Fi Weekend?
Yeah, it was really good. It was...
It's a bit dark in that place, isn't it?
Yes, it's very dark. There's a lot more light here.
I did it last year. And I was going, oh my God, I can't see anything. It was like
the darkness, the constant disco sound, the disco balls, etc. It's like a trip into Hades in many ways.
Yeah, kind of. But it was good fun, though. It was good last year.
Thoroughly enjoyable, I know to say. But yes, I think we were talking about this a few moments ago, and I think Eloise would say we prefer the location here.
Yeah, it's a lot bigger. It's a lot nicer, more air, more space.
You can't beat the seaside, can you? That's lovely.
Emblazoned upon your chest, if I can be so bold, we have the Talons of Weng Chiang with the Tom Baker episode and, of course, the giant rat, which one of those wonderful midweek drivettes called Rosalind Anderson, who was the first official BBC call girl, but they changed the name to assistant floor manager before she became a producer, had lots of agonies getting the rat to move correctly.
Oh, really?
I'll just share that for a bit of trivia.
That was the longest question, if it was a question.
It was an observation.
Oh, indeed. Oh, really? I'm not even sure I remember seeing the episode.
No, you're going to say you're
really
too young.
Good for not reading the books and occasionally not even watching the episode.
Already Eloise has been a wee bit concerned that we got one Paul there from Liverpool, Paul McCartney, but what about Paul McGann?
What about Paul McGann? That's what I always say. What about Paul McGann?
Where is he?
I don't know. In Liverpool. He's been gigging in Liverpool, apparently, recently, with his brothers.
Have you not done portraits of Paul at all for Eighth Doctor?
Not so far. I've been a bit... If I wasn't commissioned, I've never really got around, apart from that one down there, which is like a Three Doctor update.
Homage, I would say. Homage. You got Matt Smith, you got David Tennant, and, of course, Peter Capaldi.
That's right. Well, that was a private commission, so that's how that came about. But I do need to catch up. And I see Paul McGann at these things all the time. I'm slightly embarrassed that I haven't nailed him yet.
Listen, we've just had folk who are actually sort of arguing about the fact that you haven't got any Star Trek stuff there. It says it on the stand, really.
There you go. Well, I'm trying to diversify because I never really planned any of this. But somebody invited me to a convention, and I was like, why? But people kind of interested in your work. Okay. So I've been doing Doctor Who, obviously. But now I'm kind of delving into, like, earlier stuff. I did TV Sci-Fi Magazine. That's where I kicked off. Bionic Man.
The thing is, actually, Jeff, I have somewhere those editions of Sci-Fi, which actually were very much the precursor. Or they ran simultaneously with Starburst, the early days, the early years, etc.
Right,
in the 1970s, $6 Million Man. Actually, Bionic Woman, we actually have, with respect to an artificial hip, the very own Emily here. So, you know, when I talk about Bionic Woman, you are the contemporary Bionic Woman.
Well, I mean, it's not artificial. It's just got some titanium screws in it.
But. Yeah, that's titanium screws. I mean, that's Jamie Summer stuff, isn't it?
It is. Of course it is, yeah. Well, apparently I get everything wrong anyway. Now that it's online again, Bionic Man's arm is the wrong arm. I've got a Doctor Who a dinosaur that's got... It's a Tyrannosaurus Rex and it's got three fingers.
It's bad at spelling primeval incorrectly, isn't it, really?
Oh, I'm not happy about that. It's primeval spelt wrong in the version.
Really? Really?
That's Sorry, Steve. It's just, you know, she will actually pick out these kind of things, really.
or is it Steph?
Nice. See what you did there. The line, obviously, Jeff, is quite clearly say, well, look, alternate universes, parallel dimensions. In my world, this is how they look like.
Indeed. He answered very, very concisely.
Yeah, exactly. It's great stuff. I have to ask the question, which you've possibly been asked several times before, or maybe not. Any relation to Stan Cummins, the former Middlesbrough footballer?
Absolutely not.
Nice.
I am related to Brian Cummins, who played for Bolton Wanderers many moons ago, who's my dad. And I'm related to Jess Lingard via my mother.
Manchester United.
That's a couple of... Yeah, my dad was massive on United.
Oh, dear.
Jess, I know, what can
As
you
a
do?
City fan, obviously.
Well,
it's going so well.
City are doing well. I've got an old friend who's a City fan and has been a City widow for a long, long time. Yeah,
I've been there, I've worked there, bought the T-shirt, all sorts of things. Emily, any questions? No.
we can edit that bit out, that long pause out.
Eloise.
Looking at your actual art itself, this picture of a Capaldi, how long would it roughly take you to illustrate something like that?
The older ones, to divert it slightly, used to take forever. That is a blow-up of that, which is about that big. And I think it took me a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks. But a lot of the old stuff, where I used to spend quite a bit of time, long days, used to take up to a month and beyond sometimes. So I've never become a millionaire as a result of that.
It's quality, not quantity, Jim.
Indeed. Absolutely. So, yeah, these were more kind of watercolour-y and on watercolour paper, so a little faster.
I know.
The chap who wanted the logo as well, that was a bit tricky to do that by hand because I wouldn't have done that in the first place. And I went a bit wrong with the O, I think. It went a bit wonky, so I had it sucked into the black hole.
It's a vortex, temporal vortex. These things happen. As I look at the book covers, I must admit I do have a fondness for the New Adventures Doctor Who with Sylvester McCoy. I think that's very good.
Yeah.
What's your own personal favourite?
The one you mentioned.
Really?
Yeah, because
wow.
That was the first one, and I was obviously concentrating. I think they kind of steadily went downhill.
No.
But I do like that one. I like the dinosaur one, the Blood Heat. There's one with one of my daughters on it, which I think is War Child, and I just like that because she's on it. And
that's all I need to say. Apart from, how can people actually access Jeff Cummins online?
JeffCummins.com is your first port of call.
Well, Eloise, you'd be delighted to know that the moment has arrived where we can say the awesomely talented Mark Dexter has got a few moments with us. Mark, how are you?
You've heard strange things about me. You've been misinformed, I think.
Oh, no. We've heard the Doctor Who connection. We've got Transformers. We've got Red Dwarf. We've got a whole range of things. And, of course, Doctor Who, when Eloise, you rightly said, which Doctor Who was he in?
Oh, I can't remember the name now. The one with the Vashna Rada.
Interesting. Remember the bad guys. they're creepy. Apparently, that double bill, Silence of the Library of Forest of the Dead, it comes second when people are polled for the scariest Doctor Who of recent times. We get
Spoilers.
Beaten by the Weeping Angels tend to.
Exactly.
It's slightly more scary, but horrible, horrible storyline. Grotesque. My kids were very young when they were forced to watch Dad in Doctor Who. And they were properly creeped out. There's people throwing money at me.
I know. Mark Dexter, Busker as well. It's fantastic.
I'm coming back to Scarborough as soon as I can. I keep ending up in sci-fi, which, frankly, is fine by me, because I am a bit of a sci-fi geek, frankly. My wife will testify, tend to watch lots of it.
I'm very impressed, Mark, that you're occupying the space which in previous years was taken by John Rampling. So good to see that the legacy of quality actors in this particular part of the main hall is being maintained.
This was his space, wasn't it?
It was.
I thought I could smell something.
Well, there you go. So how have you found Sci-Fi Scarborough? I mean, apart from saying it's just following my satellite navigation system, how's it been?
Well, let me tell you, I got onto the convention circuit about 2 years ago, and the one convention that everybody's been saying you've got to go to, first of all they say, have you been? And I say no, and they say, you've got to go, is this convention. So it's great to finally be here, because you just hear good things from punters and, you know, us lot, slebs, whatever you want to call us, alike. They're all saying, you know, you've got to come here, and I'm beginning to see why. It's what a nice part of the world as well.
Indeed so, is it?
I thought I'd been here, but I walked here this morning instead of taking a car that was sent, because I like to see this, the area that I'm in, and I took a good look at the bay, and I haven't been here before.
Past lives, perhaps.
Ooh.
Retrogression.
No, we all get sci-fi.
Eloise.
Hi. I mainly become aware of you when you were in Red Dwarf, so what was that like for you, playing Rimmer's brother?
Well, it occurred to me fairly early on that the reason I got the job is because I resemble Arnold Rimmer.
And or Chris Barry.
Well, specifically Arnold Rimmer, you know, the weaselly face, you know, sort of a git face. And that took.
I won't use the S word followed by a head. It's not good.
There was a whiff of smeg about my face, you might say.
That's not going to go down well in Spotlight casting director, is it? Let's face it. You know, Mark Dexter, he can do a whiff of smeg. It's nice. You know, special skills.
It was equal parts a thrill, but also it was squeaky bum territory because. When you're a fan of a show, like I have been since the beginning, and then you're in it, there's a certain pressure not to let the side down.
It's the Craig Charles.
Well, exactly. Yeah, he's just, hello. You can't really do a scene with somebody who you're in awe of because you've got to get your job done. And there was the extra element of it because the episode I was in was the very first episode of the new era on Channel Dave. So there was an unspoken pressure there to get it right, and I think we just about got away with it. But
I think you did more than that, Mark. You nailed it. You nailed it, sir.
Well, I'd spent the sort of 2 weeks beforehand watching the show since the very beginning, rewatching so that I was up to speed on just how gittish Chris was in the character. So
you're sitting next to Hattie Aridge as well. I mean, this is just amazing.
Yes, it's funny. Over the last couple of years, I've sat next to Norman and Hattie on various occasions.
Yes, Norman's done Sci-Fi Scarborough as well back in the day. Yeah. So he still finds it amazing that people still recognise him in the charming Norman Lovett way.
He's just got one of them faces, hasn't he? I've actually got to know most of the cast much more well than I did when I was doing the show on this circuit, you know, just kind of travelling the world, doing these crazy events.
As we're having a science fiction symposium in November to celebrate 60 years of the Twilight Zone and indeed the joys of 50 years since Apollo 12 and Apollo 11 were around, who knows, we might be able to invite you to the University of Lincoln if you'd be available for that.
Well, I'm a Lincolnshire boy.
Then I think there's a message there, isn't there? Quite clearly,
I was.
We should exchange details.
I wasn't born there, but I've ended up there, so that would be great. Yeah, absolutely.
Eloise, do you think Mark Dexter could be prevailed upon to actually grace us with his presence at the University of Lincoln?
Oh yeah, definitely.
So the wheels are beginning to be put in motion.
I mean, if there's a bag of crisps involved, I'm there.
But not too salty fries, because otherwise, it'd be excess consumption of water.
They were delicious fries, but I mean, goodness. Hang on, let me just take a swig.
Yeah, exactly, it's too much salt. You know, at the end of the day, you've got to have some more salt. You know, it's the old classic Alan Partridge. Can I drink a water, please? Can I drink a water? Sorry.
Yes, now we're going from sci-fi.
Exactly.
Although still comedy, and I might add, live audience comedy. Because there's not a lot in this country being made in front of live audiences anymore. If you think back to what I would call the golden era of...
on the buses.
Well, I was thinking of the good
Are
ones,
you being served?
No. Derry and June and yes. Sorry and all this. We were replete with live audience British TV comedy, but it's very rare that you'll get a live audience comedy, and Red Dwarf is still flying that flag, so... You know.
Mark, it's been an honour and a privilege to connect with your good self today. Is there an online website that you'd like to promote as well?
I had a go at building a Mark Dexter website, and then I thought, this is ridiculous.
People thought you were giving medical advice. It was MD. It was, you know, people were sort of.
Twitter, don't you?
I have a Twitter handle. It's Real Mark Dexter. There we go. Come and say hi.
And follow, even though it's not scary or stalkerish in the slightest to actually sort of follow.
Follow me wherever I go.
With the words, many a good night out with Belinda, we can only be speaking to somebody whom Belinda Wannis, God bless our Australian cotton socks, was saying, you must feature on the show. It's Hattie Hayridge. How are you, Hattie?
Hello. Hi, everybody.
So you're sitting curiously in the same spot that Norman Luffett has sat in Paris Pass.
Ah, yes.
Spooky.
As I did on the show.
No, exactly.
It's uncanny.
But still very exciting. And without your good self, Hattie, frankly, you know, Holly would just not be the same sort of person we've come to know and love.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay, let's open it up. Eloise, questions for Hattie.
Hi. With Red Dwarf, what was your favourite thing about actually being in the show?
I think because we had such a laugh, really, and the writers were with us all the time, which, I mean, it was the first thing I ever did, so I didn't know that that wasn't usual. So the writers were with us. We was all a little, you know, the Red Dwarf posse, as they used to say. So we'd be around the... you know,
you've got your Chris
studios.
Barry, you got your Craig Charles.
Yeah, exactly. You got your Danny, yep. You got your Robert. No, it was great fun. And the writers were fun as well. So the whole thing.
Were you ever tempted to do a scrap heap challenge with Robert Llewellyn?
No, I haven't been asked.
Sad
to
loss.
Scrap heap challenge.
I think I'll start a campaign now.
I did do thing, a kind of strange pilot thing once for a type of scrap heap. Yeah. Challenge way before we did that, but we got chased off of a tip. Us and the BBC got chased off of the tip by some very shady characters, and then they lost the whole enthusiasm for doing that show. So,
and that's one of the reasons I left Lambda and decided to go into higher education. It's not going to work on that basis. Anything else, Emily? No, and indeed, Emily, any questions for yourself?
What did you find most challenging about playing Holly?
It wasn't a challenging part, which is lucky because I hadn't had the 3 years at RADA or anything like that. I just sat there in a black polo neck jumper against a black background with the cameraman like knee to knee to me, because like right focusing in, filming me. So I didn't have to walk and talk at the same time. So that was really good. But what was most challenging was probably taking over from Norman, because I didn't know how people would react. But luckily, it was before the internet, so that's how long ago it was.
Oh, Lord, before the internet, genuine holograms, of course.
Yeah, BI, before the internet. And so if anyone wanted to write to me, they'd had to have written in green crayon and post it to the BBC, which is the classic thing that people that didn't like things used to write
usually,
in.
Usually the letters in green crayon were really put to one side for the sort of help needed.
There really were letters in green crayon.
So sometimes we just step away. Hattie, I'm very impressed. Talking about colour, you've actually come in matching sci-fi Scarborough outfits.
Yes.
You've got a wonderful blue sort of outfit on here. Was that a deliberate attempt to say, I'm going to actually get the whole coordination right?
Well, I have got a dress this colour, this one I'm wearing. I'm thinking, so when I saw that was the thing, I thought, oh yeah, well, that'd be good.
And have you been to Scarborough before?
I think I've been twice. Once I definitely remember when I was touring doing stand-up with Lee Evans, and the our tour manager had a map of the world in his diary, and that's how we used to organise our stand-up tour, from that map. We'd had the tour manager drive down from Aberdeen to Scarborough, and we arrived 25 past 7 when the show started at 7:30. So what I remember is like just rushing straight
so
on the
making,
stage.
Making the half, that's just a nonsense. That's a wimp's basically.
Yeah, just rush straight on.
Hattie, it's been a privilege sharing some thoughts with your good self today. Good luck. Are you here for the whole weekend?
Yeah. That'd be great. Sure. And Monday as well. I mean, not... Yeah, I know the show's not on Monday, but, you know, and I came Friday. I like to see the whole of Scarborough.
Yeah, Steve Dickinson would be very impressed with that. You know, Friday, Saturday, Saturday. Oh, Hattie, we salute you. Take care. Is there a web address that you have as yet? Are you online? Can people access Hattie Hayridge through going through online too?
I've got a website, that's all. I'm not on anything else. I'm not on anything for comments and stuff.
No, quite very sensible.
It's
very
too complicated. I'm only a computer. I can't work things out like that.
HattieHayridge.com?
Yeah.
Well, we're almost at the stage where we'll be saying happy trails, and one of us will actually be going to North Allerton. Yes, I'll say again, North Allerton. And Eloise and myself will be heading back down to Lincoln via Scarborough. And so it's been your first Sci-Fi Scarborough, Eloise. What have your considered opinions and thoughts been?
Yeah, I like it. It's busier than I actually thought it would be. It's quite bigger than I thought it would be, and the guests are really lovely, and so are the stall artists and the authors.
And we don't have that consistent boom, 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 boom nightclub disco beat, do we?
Yeah, I don't have a jawache this time, nor headache from lack of lights, so it's perfect.
But having said that, you know, if you're listening to Sci-Fi Scarborough, and indeed Sci-Fi Weekender folk, hats off to the whole range of elements that were actually there. I noticed you've been pointing things out, Emily. What have you spotted now?
There's a baby dressed as Yoda right now that I can see, and that's...
Oh, no, no, Yoda is dressed not as is this. As I said, sometimes therapist fees alone, going through the roof. You have actually got, upon your person, Emily, a signed Richard Piers Rayner version of the sixth Doctor, Colin Baker. Is that one of your highlights? How's it been for you?
Yeah, it's been great. I've got to meet lots of people that I wouldn't normally get to meet, and I'm really happy because I've got to meet a real-life Ewok and a man that was in Chuckle Vision.
Success. You see what sending that email to Southside Broadcasting does? Who would have thought it, eh?
Yeah, it was good.
And Eloise?
Yeah, I'm good. I can carry two versions of Paul McGann around with me today now, so I'm having a great day.
Yeah, we won't talk about where the second version is, but what the heck. At least you got sort of... And again, it's signed by Richard Piers Rayner, ASOR author. I mean, I must admit, his artistry is pretty special, isn't it?
It's amazing, especially looking at the picture of Paul here. The way he's captured him is absolutely wonderful.
So, ready for Sci-Fi Scarborough 2020?
Oh, I'm going to go buy my tickets now.